talking about the organic community and their acceptance of physical organic chemistry and what was happening after the war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there were a whole lot of people who had been, well, some had been trained during the war, and then the new bunch who were coming out after the war, many of them had been working with Winstein and Bartlett and the people who were getting the show on the road. As far as free radical chemistry was concerned, all of the principles that had come out of polymer chemistry were just waiting to be applied to other things.
Mm-hmm.
So there was really a... all the stuff was piled up behind the dam waiting to come up.
I see. Yeah, that's a totally new insight into the the way the spread came so fast after the war. What about the industrial attitude toward physical organic chemists before and after the war? I think you've sort of expressed what it was before the war.
There were very few places before the war who had much of any interest in it. They all... I mean, the attitude in most of the DuPont company was certainly that chemistry was... Well, I suspect Roger Adams and Speed Marvel were the big suppliers of chemists to DuPont, and they had a much more classical and organic outlook. We've always had the situation that there were a few laboratories around the country which were doing important fundamental work in industry, and they keep on changing around. One company does it for a while, and then another. I don't think DuPont was rather late, I would say, in getting into a physical organic approach to organic chemistry. General Electric was, well, Frank Mayo went to General Electric, and there was fairly good sentiment for that sort of thing around there. It spread rather slowly as they began hiring the people who've been trained this way.
I think the first time that either I heard or read about the work that you had done on copolymerization, and then I realized that it had come out of U.S. rubber. I was shocked. I didn't think anything like that would ever come out of industrial. Then after the war, do you think that industrial outfits began to look more...
Yes, I think so. As one could persuade your employer that you might be able to make the process run better if you understood why it worked.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been a mixture of empirical and...
Yes. Do you think that what they had observed during the war had any influence on that? That is...
Well, it certainly did in the polymer-based industries. And the... the oil companies, I'm sure, did a good deal of this, too, because the catalytic cracking was a major technical development during the war years in the petroleum industry, and the carbonium ion basis of this was recognized very early. So some of them began to do it.
I had mentioned to you over the phone the Organic Reactions Mechanism Conference, and you told me that you were there. Can you remember much about the conference, anything about its origins? You already told me some of the people you remember who were there.
I think it was... Its origin was Charlie Price, and I guess Paul Bartlett had a hand in setting it up. Whelan was there, he may have had. I don't know who else did. Winstein, I think, was there.
Yeah, he gave a talk. Yeah. Hammett gave a talk. And in fact, H.C. Brown gave a talk at that point. Whelan did.
On steric effects.
That's right. That's right. Non-classical steric effects, what he called
it.
Do you remember anything else about the conference as such? I realize it's a long time ago.
Not really, except that I felt it was a very rewarding conference to be at as far as I was concerned. Mm-hmm. It was a good meeting.
The next of your papers that you recommended to me was the paper with Griggs, Wolfstern, and Mayo on the effect of meta and para substitution on the reactivity of the styrene double bond. And could you give me a little background on that and what you felt its significance was?
Well, it was the first time anybody tried to apply the Hammett equation to a radical reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there was what looked like a polar effect in free radical reactions had come out of the very first paper by Mayo and Lewis on copolymerization.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd been gathering data on how this worked. They were so I was interested in seeing if you could isolate the phenomena better by going to the substituted styrenes in the same way that one does in polar reactions by getting the groups moved away from the reaction site.
Mm-hmm. This is something that's always sort of fascinated me. I don't know if anyone's ever totally explained that yet, aside from, you know, there being a partial polar influence or one can draw structures with a partial carbonium ion.
Yeah, attempts to treat it more quantitatively have not been awfully successful, I would say. But the principle stays there. There are several ways of looking at it which come to much the same conclusion.
Yeah. I know Hartman did exactly the same thing with the peresters and found exactly the same kind of effect.
Yeah.
And, the argument still remains of exactly what it is.
Well, Paul and I have been in close communication on that subject ever since we both started working on it, shall we?
Paper that you, the next paper was the paper on copolymerization by non-radical mechanisms, and that was a paper discussing the different products from radical carbonium ion and carbanion polymerization, and you suggested that as a tool for determining mechanisms of polymerization using different catalysts.
It works very nicely.
It does, and it has been used. That was my...
You actually... There's almost nothing that you can do to alter the reactivities in the radical reactions. You may be able to alter them somewhat in the ionic reactions because these things are at best ion pairs and sometimes they're rather covalent.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's been a very useful tool to answer that question.
And the next paper was... from Lieber Brothers, and that was on the acid strengths of surfaces.
Actually, I think I probably did the work at U.S. Rubber, although I was at Lieber Brothers.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That was this little hobby I did in my spare time.
Yeah, it was sort of a nice little paper. It was another attempt on your part, it seemed to me, to quantify or semi-quantify some kind of a chemical fact. And
this approach has been used very extensively by the petroleum people and characterizing catalysts since then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I take it their measurements are a bit more quantitative now.
Yeah.
I know yours were
very qualitative. Some people,
they were visual.
It's hard to make them really quantitative, but this has been basically two properties of the acid catalyst. One is the quantitative one of how many acid sites there are and how strong they are.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that has had a little trouble resolving is whether these things are acting as Bronsted acids or Lewis acids.
Mm-hmm.
And that I never got involved in.
And finally, the copolymerization chem review article.
Yeah.
that was another monumental effort, it seemed to me, with Frank Mayo.
Yeah.
And what prompted that one? And
well, we were asked to write it, I guess, and also thought it was a good idea.
I see.
The most important thing in that, I think, is besides putting it all together in one place, is that it has the first real attempt to show how these things apply to other radical reactions,
mm-hmm.
or other preliminary matter.
Mm-hmm. Did the editors of Chem Review suggest it, or you said you were asked to write it?
I think they asked us to write it. I don't really remember. Maybe we thought it was a good idea. Maybe Frank and I thought it up. I'm not sure which.
This time, did you again prepare the first draft? Or
well, we wrote different pieces of it, really.
Yeah.
And sat together. He's a very careful writer very meticulous, making sure you said the thing just right. So we spent quite a lot of time arguing about it.
Uh-huh. Okay. Of course, a good deal of it came out of the work that you've been doing.
Yeah,
did this give you any incentive to do the 1957 book? Was it sort of a running start on it, or did it have any effect at all on the later book? Had you begun to think about a book on it?
Well, I guess we got more practice writing things. Writing got easier, and yeah, it mm-hmm. probably.
When did you start on the 57 book?
It took about 3 years to write. So I guess I probably started in the summer of 54.
So you were already at Columbia by that
time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is a sort of an odd question. I talked to Charlie Price in spring.
Yeah.
And, at one point, he mentioned his QE scheme.
Yeah.
And the one thing that he said that I thought about when I knew I was going to talk to you was that he said you were never a big fan of the QE scheme, although in reading the paper, the papers that you wrote where you mentioned it and in your book, you always gave it some praise, but he said you were a detractor, and he thought that you had told him that the reason was that you had thought of it at some earlier point, but you'd abandoned the idea because there was no good way of determining an initial QE.
It took me some time to convince him that you had to make two arbitrary choices and then you could start building the scale, and I finally did.
Yes. Well, I guess he knew that.
Yeah.
Somehow he managed to make the arbitrary choices. I didn't.
And he made plausible arbitrary choices. But it didn't measure one thing that he thought it did, because you did have to make these arbitrary choices.
Mm-hmm.
And
I guess one of your criticisms, it wasn't an absolute, it was always a relative thing.
Yeah. And the actual deviations from it were somewhat qualitative, just always rather qualitative.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was an awfully simple model from my viewpoint. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In 1949, you left U.S. Rubber.
Yeah.
And you already told me that a couple of other people were leaving right about the same time. Were there any particular reason for that? Or?
Yeah, they were losing interest in supporting their basic research, and they got a new research director I didn't like very much, and I thought I would like to have been inquiring around about teaching jobs. I had been teaching a night course for couple of years over at Brooklyn Poly to sort of see what it was like to actually try to
mm-hmm.
teach this stuff. Probably since they probably got my name from Morris Garage, Baker Brothers approached me and offered me a very large salary. Dan Standards.
An offer that you could not refuse. An offer that you could not refuse.
Yeah. Since I was feeling sort of restive about where I was then, I figured that I was going to have to be an industrial chemist. I might as well be an industrial chemist with a little more power, a little more money.
Mm-hmm.
And while I didn't do much science while I was at Lever Brothers, I found it quite an interesting experience, and I learned quite a lot about chemical technology, and no regret having spent some time there at all.
Okay, now this was in Cambridge.
Yeah.
And what kinds of things was Lieber Brothers interested in?
Well, they were. I was essentially in charge of their organic research, and I was working on new synthetic detergents and formulations for them. They were. That was most of it. They were in the airwave business. We did some work, managed to develop a odorless hair waving agent. The trouble is, reduced hair smells a little bit anyhow, so it didn't entirely work. And then they decided that wasn't a profitable line anyhow. But I essentially worked on the development of new products and processes with them. Did a little. I published I think three papers from there.
Okay, can you tell me something about your move to Columbia? I think you were probably recruited by Louis Hammett.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, I was fortunate. I think that I tried to apply his equation to radical reaction, which convinced him I was a profound thinker. I met him. Actually, about that time, I first met him at this 1946. I might have met him before. I'm not sure. I talked to him about academic jobs before I went to Lieber Brothers. He knew I was interested, and then they developed some vacancies. And I think actually, in all due honesty, they offered the job to Jack Roberts, and he turned them down, so then they offered it to me. In fact, I know that happened. I always felt Jack's wife, who wanted to go back to California, did me a really good turn.
That's right, he was at MIT at that time. And you were sufficiently interested from two or three years before, so that you...
Yeah.
You made the change.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about... Louis was chairman at that time.
Louis was chairman, yeah.
And can you tell me a little bit about the rest of the staff at Columbia?
They just developed sort of a gap in organic chemistry because Bill Dering and Dave Curtin had both left. And, in fact, three people left. What's his name?
Elderfield,
yeah. So that Charlie Dawson, I guess, is about the only other. And Charlie Dawson and a young instructor. The name I can't remember right now, but were the only organic chemists on the staff at that point. Very shortly, they recruited another young man named Leighton McCoy, and at the same time that they offered me a position, they also offered one to Gil Stork. Harvard never gave anybody tenure. He didn't actually come until the middle of the next year. He came in January of 1953. Mm-hmm. So, and then the next organic chemist they added was Ronnie Breslow. Okay. At that point, everything was doing fine.
Do you know whether Hammett was still... I don't know whether Hammett was still chairman at that time, too. He sort of told me something about
Hammett,
he had some extra money, and they brought him in first as a research associate.
Well, we brought him in as I guess his title was an instructor, but he wasn't on the regular university budget. They got $10,000 a year from DuPont, so by paying him half of that, they were able to get him to come. $5,000 was about
the best bargain
salary at that point, yeah.
Best bargain you got in a long time.
Well, a full professor... I went to Columbia at $9,000 as a full professor.
Must have been a sort of a cut down from your salary at Lieber Brothers at that time.
I was getting 12.5 at Lieber Brothers.
Oh. I figured you were in the $50,000 bracket.
That was a lot of money. That was because...
That's true, that was 50.
There are very few people in the industry who are getting double the starting salary to discover. I mean, after all, how many people can you think of now who are getting 50?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And at that point, the industrial starting salaries were about 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Was it George Franco?
He came about the same time I did. He was, in fact, I guess he may have come the year before. He was working on ESR, and we did a couple of short collaborative projects together.
Mm-hmm. That was really a very early entrance of a physical, an organic chemist into that area.
Well, he had one of the first, the first really sensitive machines. You had to build your own machine in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that one really ought to be able to see the radicals in a gel polymer system. It turned out you could see them perfectly well.
How did you start building a research group? How did you go about choosing graduate students?
Students you could get, of course.
They come around and see each of the instructors.
I got a little money to hire a postdoc to get myself started, and I got a Chinese student named Chang, who turned out to be a very careful experimentalist, who's heading now. Eventually took a job at DuPont. And the first student I got was, I guess I got rather promptly because he, I forget what had happened. Well, he was all ready to start research, I guess. And we found him Shelley Buckler, who is now a well up in the Polaroid Corporation somewhere. And then after that, I just slowly accumulated them.
Care to make any comparison of graduate students from that day to graduate students today?
Well, as many other people have said, I think they probably expected to work somewhat harder in the late 50s than they did later. You tended to get the kind of students who were recruited at Columbia in general tend to be a very hard-working type.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're any smarter than they are now.
Mm-hmm. You were chairman at Columbia from
63 to 6, I guess, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They have a rotating chairman.
I see. Was there anything that you felt characterized your chairmanship that were any high points that...
We won some and we lost some. Lost Harry Gray and Martin Karplus, but I hired Nick Turo and George Flynn and... Who else? A couple of people turned out to do pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any particular philosophy about leading a chem department at that time? Or?
Well, that was sort of the peak of the, we're approaching the peak of the boom in government support and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I used to tell my colleagues it would be a good idea to go on being nice to the industrial visitors, because someday they mightn't be so eager.
After you entered academia, I assume you did some consulting.
I've done quite a lot, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who were you consulting for? Who have you been consulting for?
Well, I consulted for Lever Brothers for a long time after I left them. Mm-hmm. I consulted with Celanese for a long time. Mm-hmm. Well, one time or another, Union Carbide, Chevron, Sun Oil Company, two or three others for a short period.
Do you think that had an influence on your academic research? Did it support any of it, for example?
Got very small pieces of support out of it sometimes, but never, mm-hmm. never very much. I don't know that I ever really did much of any research which was very close at the university, which was very closely connected with any mm-hmm. of it. But I do think that I'm sorry that industry isn't making as much use of consultants as they did before, because to me it's one of the, they always worry about the fact that there isn't enough mutual understanding between the academic world and industry, but this is one of the cheapest and easiest ways to give people some idea what their problems are and mm-hmm. doing something about it.
See, and you think they're cutting back on
Well, they certainly did cut back on it enormously in the early 70s, and whether they've come part way back or not, I'm not sure.
Your move to Utah, you've commented a little on that in various and sundry journals that have asked you about it.
Well, I sort of felt like I wanted a change, and I was tired of the thought of spending my rest of my life commuting into New York from Montclair, New Jersey, because my wife didn't have any interest in moving any nearer to New York. Mm-hmm. Didn't appeal to me very much. All the troubles at Columbia didn't improve my morale, although they, I thought the chemistry department behaved quite sensibly.
These were the student troubles in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that convinced me that, you can take this out of the record, but one of the things that convinced me that Columbia didn't really know what it was doing very well was the time that they got themselves involved with the cigarette filter business, which you might remember.
Vaguely, I remember.
Well, anyhow, the some chump up in the medical school allowed himself to get persuaded that this promoter had developed a marvelously effective cigarette filter. And then you could make a perfectly good argument that if somebody had done this, since you can't get people to stop smoking, it might be a good idea to have them smoke better filtered cigarettes. But when I read about this, I went sort of meeting where they announced it to the press, and then I called up somebody up in the administration and said, "Do you really know anything about cigarette filters? You may be needing some technical advice." I said, "Oh yeah, but in a few weeks I got a desperate phone call, somebody high up in the administration, and I was involved in getting them extricated from the project. It was a little nice, straightforward, simple applied physical chemistry.
Let's see, what year did you take over as editor of the journal?
I've had it for 5 years now. So
okay, and what prompted you to do that? It was
I'd just gotten off of a couple of things, I guess, and Bryce Crawford called me about it at a time when I guess I was feeling somewhat susceptible, so I went and thought about it. Mm-hmm. I just finished being the chairman of the Committee on Professional Training of ACS, and a couple of other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been interested in the enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Has it consumed a great deal of your time?
Yeah, quite a lot. But I don't regret it. I think I'm willing to. I told him I'd do it for 2 more years, and I'll be 65 then, and I'll see what I want to do about it then.
Mm-hmm. question.